This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
People being happy in musical theatre can still make me cry. As soon as a big show number comes up, it could be anything.
This is frontrunner Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing. Karine Rose is an English actor, a trained one at that, who happens to be in the country for a few years. She's a graduate of Mount View Academy of Theatre Arts in London and has a master's degree in acting. She should be teaching acting classes. She should be acting. Unfortunately, we won't see her on stage in the very near future because she's playing director instead, working with a group of young people in a music theatre performance training program, which is culminating in the musical Grease. Before we jump to talking about your directing, Karine, what led you into this life in the theatre?
I started when I was 18 and I joined a local amateur theatre group, and they were producing something called Zigazagger by Peter Terson.
Was this in London?
It was in Surrey, just outside London. And it was a show about football and football supporters. And I loved it. And I'd had a bit of experience at school, but I went to an all-girls school. So I got to play the boys because I had quite a low voice and I was quite tall. So I was Lord Windermere and various other male characters. So then I joined an amateur group and I did amateur work for years. And then I finally plucked up the courage to try for drama school and got in.
Was your undergraduate studies in the theatre?
No. I never actually went to uni. I started a degree in drama and English, I think it was.
As an undergraduate.
As an undergraduate. And then I left after about a term because I realised that all my cohort, all they ever wanted to do was teach. And I was on the wrong degree course with the wrong people. I didn't ever want to teach, really. I wanted to perform. So I left and then continued with the amateur work.
Before you went into theatre school or drama school, mm-hmm. What were your ideas about acting?
I suppose my biggest idea was it was about performance. It just filled my head that it was about performing. It was about being a character and just getting on stage and doing it. I didn't actually realise that the work that you have to put in to underpin that character is so important, and it just hadn't occurred to me.
What do you mean is that it's about performance? Because it is about performance.
Oh, yes, it's about performance, but it's not all that. It's not the case of you get your script and you go up on stage and you perform. There is so much more work that needs to be done before you get to that point. So the people that just perform, there's no depth. There's no foundation to their character. So, and you can see it. When you watch a show and you realise that that actor has just basically picked up their script and thought, oh, this sounds nice, this is how I'm going to say this, without any thought as to why they're saying it, what they want. And it's a bit shallow. And I think a lot of my previous work, before I went to drama school, much as I thought I was great, looking back on it, there was no foundation. It was all a bit wishy-washy. And that's something that, yeah, I learned a huge amount.
I suspect many people mistake clarity of speech for acting.
Oh, yes.
If I can say the lines clearly, people can hear me and that's enough.
Yes. There's a phrase that one of my teachers talked about called park and bark, and she hated it. So as an actor walks onto stage, they stop and then they proclaim their lines. And that's parking and barking. You park yourself and you bark your lines. And it's really not good. And it's, as I say, it's very shallow. There's no depth. Yes, it sounds lovely, but it's not what you sound like. It's what you're doing. It's what your brain is thinking.
The research, the training and all of that that undergirds the performance. Sometimes I suspect that with actors, knowing the character in their heads, meaning that you can... If I were to write a thesis on a particular character, Shylock or John Falstaff or whatever. Somebody could probably do that. But to embody those thoughts in the performance, in their physicality, sometimes that becomes the challenge.
Oh, yes. And that's the difference between an actor and perhaps someone who just studies it as a play and they're never going to perform it. So that's when the performance comes in. So, yes, that would be the difference between an intellectual who's studying it for the intellectual value of the piece and the performer. You sort of have to have both. You need to have aspects of both character to be able to bring it to fruition.
What's the hardest thing about acting?
Not acting.
Ooh, that, you have to tell me more about that one.
That is the hardest point. And that is the thing that I kept being told at drama school. And I think because I'd spent all the years doing amateur and acting as I saw it, constantly in my feedback sessions, I was being told, you are so good when you don't act. Because I pushed too hard. And they said, you've got to rely on what you're doing and believe it's good and not push it. Because as soon as you push it, you become an actor acting and not reacting. Acting is reacting. And that's what it's all about. You're reacting to the other person on stage. An actor needs to be generous and not be selfish and not say, oh, this is how I'm going to play this because it sounds good and this is what I want to do. You should always be reacting to the person you're on stage with.
Very interesting, because I was listening to a Keith Johnson, who is into the physical theatre and improvisation from UK.
Yeah.
He was talking about when you put two actors on stage, often they are competing rather than working together. Yeah. It's because they want to be seen as, I am engaging with the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's very much, and certainly in improvisation, that you can have a preconceived idea of where you want a scene to go. So you're fighting against each other because in your head you're thinking, well, I've said this, so you should be saying that in response to me, because improvisation obviously is all about not having a script. And you have to be generous and you have to play and you have to not have an ego. Your ego has to be left at the door and you go with what someone else wants.
Would there be this competition if there were a script?
There shouldn't be, no. No, there shouldn't be. You shouldn't be fighting over the limelight or over whatever you're doing on stage. It's still certainly generosity.
Yeah, so in essence, whether it's improv or not improv, it's just we should be generous with each other, listening to each other, responding to each other.
Yeah, certainly. Listening and reacting. That's what it's all
about. So that's the most difficult thing about acting.
That, for me, yes, that was the most difficult because I had this huge weight of previous experience, which was just acting and not reacting. Yeah.
What's the easiest?
Ooh, what's the easiest? For me, it's the fact that I've got no fear, that I love acting. I love being on stage. That's the easiest part for me, is just being there and doing it. I love it. I really do. And I can do, I love anything. I don't mind whether it's comedy, whether it's tragedy, whatever I'm playing. It's that ease I feel on stage. When I was in London, I was lucky enough to go to the Globe and be on stage at the Globe, obviously not paid. That would have been fabulous. And to do Shakespeare soliloquies on the Globe stage. And I just felt at home. It was lovely. Really, really lovely experience. And yeah, that's probably the easiest bit.
Is this lack of fear something inborn or something that you have developed over time?
I think I've developed it over time. I think I've got to an age now where I don't care. I think you get to an age where you just think, yeah, I can do that. And you can. And that's often what holds younger people back, because they're thinking, I can't do that. And to be quite honest, when I auditioned for drama school, some of the things we were asked to do were quite bizarre. And I kept wondering, why are they asking us to do this?
Like?
We had to move around the room as though we were a fried egg. Okay? And then, that wasn't enough. We then had to move around the room as though we were fried egg on the way to the opera. So you had to change slightly. And I remember thinking, why are we doing a posh fried egg. Yes, a posh fried egg or a depressed puddle. I think we were also puddles at one point. And I think it was just, they wanted to see who had no inhibitions, who was prepared to just go out there and make a fool of themselves and just have fun. And those people were the ones that were asked to stay.
I think that's why people say actors have to be fearless. Actors are incredibly brave and also generous in that if you're really listening, you are giving yourself over to the other to lead.
Yes. Yes, certainly. Yeah, it should all be about taking what they are saying and then reacting to it. And yes, you have your lines in your head. But again, a great piece of advice I was given once was you learn your lines and then you forget them. Not literally forget them, but they go to the back of your head. They don't sit in the front of your head. So that you are different every night, as the great Mike Alfred says. You are different every night. You can react differently. You have your lines, but the way you say them, your actions, whatever you do to get what you want, can change depending on what you're given.
I mean, the expression, you got to listen, is something that's thrown at actors all the time. And some would just say, look, I am listening because I know when my cues come.
Oh, exactly. Yes. And you can see that. You can see that that people close down when they're not the centre of attention. If you happen to look at the person standing at the back of the stage on the right and you look at them and you think, yeah, they've just shut off and they're waiting for their cue line. They may have one line. They may have one line that's coffee, sir, but they have to be listening all the time and reacting. They will have an objective to that scene. They will know what they want out of that scene, and they've still got to play that objective, even if they've got one line. Even if they're only the maid, they will have an objective. Whether it's, I want to serve the coffee well, I want to get out of the room quickly. They need to listen and be reacting all the time.
The listening is not just listening for the words that are said. To really listen, you have to watch the body language and all of that. Which is a skill that is needed in life, right? It's just often when we talk to somebody, we're listening either to counter or listening to see, I'm going to do one better than you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely it's a life skill. That's why I'm passionate about drama being part of the education everywhere. In the UK, they're fighting at the moment because the government are trying to cut drama out of secondary school education. And it's not just about teaching people to act. It's giving them life skills, and it's so important.
Beyond learning about not performing and listening, what is the other big thing you learned while in drama school?
All the work that has to be done to underpin what you bring to the stage. The first bit is the research, when you sit and you do table work. We were very lucky when I was at Mountview that we met Monica Dolan, who is an English actress who had performed in a TV drama about Fred and Rose West. Now, Fred and Rose West are an infamous couple in the UK. They committed horrific crimes against children and teenagers and buried their bodies in their house. And Fred West had learning difficulties, so the real instigator of the crimes is believed to be Rose West. So she was a monster, an absolute monster. And we met Monica Dolan and talked to her about all the research she had to do to play this awful part, this awful woman who you could have no sympathy for whatsoever. And the research she did, the reading she did on the case, all the notes that she found were not great. You know, they must have given her nightmares. And she did say at the time, the only people she could have around her were other actors. She couldn't cope with her normal friends who were outside the acting industry because they wouldn't understand what she was going through. And it's that sort of detailed research that you need to do to underpin your character. Then we looked a lot at Stanislavski, which can be distilled down to want, do, feel, really. What do I want as a character? What will I do to get it? And how does it make me feel? The do part of that is your actions, what you do on stage to gain your objective, what you do to other people. They can be summed up as action words. So I belittle you to get what I want. I flatter you to get what I want. I humour you. So they should always fit within the I something you construct. And then that is the action you play. And if as an actor you are always playing an action, and it can change, you can change your actions from performance to performance, and that's what makes it interesting. That makes you a far more interesting character to watch on stage, far more interesting actor with depth to your performance. So it's all that work. It's realizing what your obstacles are as a character, whether they're internal obstacles, which could be your own shyness or your temper or your jealousy, which are all internal and they belong to you, or they could be external obstacles brought onto the stage by another character who doesn't want you to achieve your objective. So it's all that sort of work that's just fantastic. And I had no idea, absolutely no idea. And I'd been doing amateur theatre for years. And as I said before, I thought I was pretty good. But then you realise what else you can do. And it's just, it's like opening a box of tricks and you think, yeah, this is great.
When are you running this workshop?
The workshop. Oh, well, we'll have to think about that one. Yes, an adult workshop.
I'm speaking with Karine Rose, an actor and an arts educator who is currently directing a young people's production of the musical Grease. Coming up, I'll take a peek at this musical Grease by going to the rehearsal space and hear how the young performers are doing, and then continue this conversation with Karine Rose about the production, which will be held at the Theatre Lounge Cafe in Plaza Damas 3. This is Front Row in the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. You're listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Last Sunday, I sneaked into the Theatre Lounge Cafe in Plaza Damas 3 and watched a rehearsal of the musical Grease, which my guest, Karine Rose, is directing. Come, follow me. Let me share with you the space and the rehearsal I witnessed. Up a flight of steep stairs, a few doors down from the only bank in the block, and at the top of the landing, a right turn to the Theatre Lounge Cafe. And as the name suggests, it's both a theatre and a cafe. Although, when there aren't any performances, the cafe is closed. The main door provides a rear entrance to the theatre cafe, on whose right side sits a bar counter with bar stools. On the left, tables and chairs for patrons and theatre-goers. But on this Sunday afternoon, only the creative crew, the performers and the stage managers. The tables and chairs are pushed tight against the left wall to create space for the rehearsal. At the very front is the stage, but much of the space there is taken up by the set of a current production titled Angry Pajamas. It's the windowed side of a home, but you can't look through the windows. The director of this musical, Karine Rose, is seated behind a dining table facing the cramped stage. The choreographer and the light designer sit beside her at an adjoining table. Karine has not only the small space to rehearse in, but also the short time, about 4 hours, before the cast of Angry Pajamas makes call time. On the left side of the stage, three chairs, and in front of them, even further left, a couple of black boxes. The kind that actors use all the time in their rehearsals to double as chairs, beds, whatever. On the right side of the stage and in line with the chairs, three more black boxes. Karine nods and says something to one of the stage managers. A call goes out for everyone to be on standby. The sound engineer hits the button and then a scene springs to life. Two female performers come from the back of the theatre and one steps up to the floor microphone and she talks. I hear her American accent. The scenes flow from one to another, and the performers sing some familiar songs. They dance also. Five young men with hubcaps, which they sometimes hold in front of them like shields, sometimes as if they were frisbees. They jump, jig, one does cartwheels. I keep wincing because I anticipate sooner or later, in that limited shoebox space, someone will either step on another person's toes or stick a finger in another person's eye. Or worse, wear a hubcap. But things go more smoothly than I anticipate, except for the occasional feedback screaming over the speakers. The sound engineer is still tinkering. Another week of rehearsals to go before this American musical Grease goes live here at the Theater Lounge Cafe, anchored by a little over a dozen young performers.
How prepared are they?
From when they start, they're at different levels. Obviously, we've started this process back in November, so it's been going on for quite some time. Some of them had already done two of the Dharma programs. They'd done the acting and the singing programs. So they came quite prepared. They got an idea of what was going to be expected. Some of them had done ballet, but not done anything else. So they came in quite raw and definitely acting. And that has been the challenge, is to try and say to them, right, forget all about that. Forget about what you think it is. This is what it is. And we started off, we did research. And I said, right, we'll sit around the table and we'll do some research. I want you to go away and look at popular culture from the 1950s in the USA. I want you to go away and look at the cars. I want you to go away and look at who was running the government, what the economic situation was like, what was happening about Vietnam, was it starting to gather momentum, so that you know all of what is feeding into these young people that you're about to portray. And I think that was a bit of a shock, because it was sort of, oh, do we not just get up and say our words? We've got to sit here and do homework.
How old are these Malaysian kids they are working with?
They range from mid-teens to mid-20s.
And they will have no sense of the Vietnam War. This Grease is set in the 1950s?
Yes, 1950s America.
When everybody thinks that the world is a big, bright, beautiful place.
Oh, yeah. You've got the after the Second World War, when there's quite a bit of prosperity there, and they've got big cars and good... Well, I say good food, fast food. It's probably not good.
That's why it's called Grease.
Terms. Yeah. But in those days, it was like, wow, we've got all this food. We've got a fantastic lifestyle. And I needed them to think about what that meant for the characters that they were playing, because Grease can be seen as a very fluffy piece. And it would be very easy to just pick up the script and get on stage and do it. But these young people are supposed to be going through an educational process, as well as in the old-fashioned Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney, let's put on a show type thing, they are also supposed to be learning. So I think they were a bit shocked when I said, right, your homework is. They were like, oh. So, yeah.
What are the challenges working with young people?
Some of them, it is encouraging a performance out of them and getting them to think about their characters and not just say the lines. It's fundamentally getting them to slow down in their delivery. They're very fast. And I said, that shows me that you're not thinking. You're just saying your line. There is no thought before your line. I need to see the brain working before I see the mouth working. Some of them are very confident, which is great. Some of them are a little less confident. So it's building them up and also pulling them back, some of them who are over, so that you get a level performance out of all of them.
This notion of people who are inhibited. Mm-hmm. How do you draw them out?
We play a lot of games. So often the inhibition is because you are with a lot of people you don't know. So it's getting that confidence that you can be silly and you can be fearless and you can make a fool of yourself. Because that's the problem, is they're frightened of making a fool of themselves. So they are inhibited. So we play a lot of warm-up games, which they seem to enjoy. We do a lot of exercises. We do physical warm-up, vocal warm-up, and that helps break down those barriers. It's difficult, but we're getting there. And what I tend to say to them is, please don't be embarrassed. Because if you're giving an embarrassed performance, then the audience will be embarrassed for you. And I don't want an audience that are feeling uncomfortable. You just need to be out there and be prepared to be foolish and have fun. That's what it's all about.
Earlier, we were talking about how you are passionate about theatre for children or young people, mm-hmm. because it's more than just the performance on the stage. Something transforms within them.
Yeah.
What kinds of transformations have you seen in these young people?
They are more confident, far more confident. I know they now know me a lot better than they did at the beginning, but they're much more confident. They're much more prepared to come and say to me, what do you think about this? What do you think? Could I try this? I feel like I should be doing that at that point. Whereas before, they would never have said it. They'd never have asked. They'd have just stood there and waited to be told, you move here, you move there. It's given that freedom to ask. And it's the teamwork. It's working together for one goal, which is a fantastic performance, which is what they're giving.
I mean, I've been attending some of these workshops and watching the young people perform. And one in particular who is in this group, who was in the earlier groups, Siobhan.
Yeah.
I have seen her change from this frightened young girl to somebody who is a lot more confident.
Yes. She has absolutely blossomed, amazingly so. I met her first on the acting part of the programme, which we're just about to start this year's one. And I met her first last year, and she was very quiet, very timid. And I looked at her and thought, ooh, do you really want to be doing this? And then I realised she had her own reasons for doing it. She was passionate about theatre, but she was finding it difficult to tell her parents how passionate she was and that they couldn't see it because they'd probably seen her in previous things and thought, I'm not sure this is what you should be doing. But she has transformed. She's really come out of herself in her relationship with me, in the way that she works with other people. And she's just blossomed.
I'm definitely talking again here to the choir. Theatre arts education is essential for young people. And it's not about getting on the stage, but it's about transforming them, opening their worlds up.
Mm-hmm. It's about making them communicators, good communicators. This world is all about communication. It's all about getting on with fellow man. And that is so helped by doing drama and learning how to communicate with other people, whether it's the actors on the stage, whether it's the technical crew backstage, whatever it is, it's communicating with an audience, it's getting your point across, it's working together. It transforms people doing drama.
You are directing young people now. Have you directed adults?
Yes, I have.
As a director, what do you look for in your actors?
No ego, generosity, willingness to play and be silly. Not necessarily an amazing talent to begin with. I would like them to be able to speak and project clearly, because then you've got a basis on which to work. But yeah, it's a sense of fun. It's an interest. You've got to be passionate about it and you've got to be prepared to do the work. I have often worked with people who just want to get up and sound good and look good. I'd rather not have them because they're not a team player. You need to be a team player in a company because that's what it's all about. Yeah.
So when are you going to direct your first Malaysian adult project? You know I was setting you up for that.
Yeah. Well, whenever someone comes and asks me, yeah, I would love to. I would love to. The young people that I'm working with at the moment, I have immense respect for because they have schoolwork, they have college work. Some of them have work and college. So their time is very precious and it is difficult sometimes because they have swim meets or they have extra tutor sessions and getting them together is very tricky. Getting a whole cast together is very tricky. So what I would love is a small adult production that I can really get my teeth into. So that'll be next after this, because this is fantastic.
Thank you very much, Karine. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Karine Rose, director of the musical Grease, produced by Dharma Music Theatre, which ran the Selangor Properties Berhad Dharma Young Artists Programme. Grease will play at the Theatre Lounge Cafe starting this Friday through Sunday, February 26th through 28th at 8:30 p.m. and then the following weekend, Friday, March 4th through Sunday, March 6th at the same time. Admission is by donation. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.